Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, editor-in-chief of the journal, coming to you again from an unfortunately soggy Vancouver day as we head further and further into late fall, early winter season. Today is an absolute pleasure for me because I get to reconnect with a friend from way back, fortunately somebody who I've had the chance to stay in touch with. Many of you will know that Julie Brown used to work for Medical Education as managing editor for many years, and she was certainly there when I first joined forces with the journal. Since that time, about 10 years ago, I would guess, she has moved on to the Cardiff University School of Medicine and taken up post there, where she's more actively engaged directly with medical education and has been conducting some research. Thanks, Julie, for making the time to chat with me.
Delighted to talk to you again, Kevin, and bore da from Cardiff.
Wonderful. Which means?
Good morning.
Good morning. I probably should have been able to guess that, but it's nice to hear it anyway. The paper that you have coming up in the February 2018 issue of Medical Education strikes me as one of those papers that I like to joke about, in that in psychology, where I grew up, so to speak, we often find that people study things that are highly relevant to their own personal experiences. Your paper, for the listeners who won't have seen it yet, is called Making the Leap to Medical Education, a qualitative study of medical educators' experiences. And is it fair to assume that you got interested in this topic in part because you've made a similar leap yourself?
Well, certainly that's true, Kevin, although I think every medical educator has to make a leap to medical education. We all start out as something else, you in psychology, me as a journalist, and other people as doctors and clinicians. So everybody who gets involved in medical education eventually has to make a decision. Am I a medical educator, in my view? And that certainly was the driver behind what led us to write this paper. I should say it wasn't just me. I wrote it with my colleagues, Katie Webb and Alison Bullock from the Cardiff University Research in Medical and Dental Education.
Great. Thank you for mentioning them. I'm going to actually quote a line from early in your paper because I'd love to ask you to elaborate on it. And as early as the abstract, actually, you say that individuals seeking successful careers in the education of medical students and doctors must, at some point in their development, make a conscious transition into a new identity as a medical educator. Do you mind telling our listeners a little bit more about why you think that's an absolute, that somebody has to take on that identity?
Well, I think it's that previous literature has suggested this. I started looking at this way back 10, 12 years ago, and nearly all of the literature that's cited in the paper demonstrates that becoming a medical educator is a very difficult job and involves a degree of loss of your primary identity as something else. So if you're going to withstand the difficulties that that raises in your sense of identity, then somehow you have to have a focus on where you are going. And so what actually inspired the title of the paper, Making the Leap to Medical Education, is a quotation from an early paper by Esther Sable and Julian Archer, where they described the experiences of junior educators feeling that they had to make this leap. So perhaps it isn't essential, but I think if you're going to thrive as a medical educator, you need to have some kind of self-acknowledged medical educator identity.
And as we think about people taking on that identity, it's likely self-evident to most that some succeed in that transition and others don't. Why did you choose to focus on the success stories?
Well, in part it was serendipity, in the sense that the Academy of Medical Educators, of which I'm the vice chair, was asked to do some research by the Higher Education Academy in the UK into the educational needs of its members. And so we conducted three focus groups consisting of 15 senior medical educators, answered their research questions, but realized that actually what we also had was an extremely rich pool of data from very senior medical educators who clearly had made that transition. So we were very interested to look at what there was about this group that might be special. Most of the literature that we've previously looked at treated medical educators as a very homogenous group and often focused on early career medical educators and the difficulties that they were experiencing. But we thought it would be interesting to look at it from the perspective of people who were actually quite senior and to establish what it was that had helped them to get to that point. So we're sort of looking at the phenomenon backwards, if you like.
Well, and it's a fairly unique example of an issue of transitions that has been explored in our field at a variety of levels. You applied both an inductive and a deductive analysis to those data that you had collected. I suspect most people won't be familiar with the framework that you use to guide your thinking. Can you share some thoughts around that?
Well, the literature uses repeatedly the words transition and leap and making the change. So it was almost natural in a way to go and look a little further at the literature on transition from within the psychology literature. Now, that is a little unusual because in the psychology literature, especially in the counselling literature, transition is usually seen as what occurs after a really significant life event, such as a bereavement or a separation or something like that. So you're right, applying it to medical education did seem a bit incongruous, except that as I looked very much more at the evidence from the literature that we'd already got, a lot of the people who were describing this change that they were undergoing into a medical educator identity were describing grief at the loss of their primary identity, stress at the having to cope with the career changes that they were undergoing, anxiety over their performance and how they were going to get through it all, and fear for the future about where their career might be going. So in a sense, it isn't an unusual inference that in fact the transition literature might well apply to the experience that medical educators have when they're first starting out and as they're progressing through their careers.
Yeah, in fact, I think it yields considerable insight to have looked at your data in that way. Even the framing around self-situation, support, and strategy, which is what I understand to be the four key components of this framework, seems to position you very nicely to consider the full gamut of what might be impacting on these individuals. Was there anything that stood out within these success stories as being particularly important?
Well, the framework comes from a book by Anderson, Goodman and Schlossberg called Counselling Adults in Transition. So it was very much looking at the key components that they describe as making a difference to how adults cope with change in order to make a transition. And in this case, they're thinking about changes from, for example, being married to being widowed, and how to establish a new identity with yourself as somebody who no longer has a husband or wife, for example, or how to cope with somebody who had a career and now no longer has a career. So they are very interested in particular in the individual experiences of those people and in counselling them through it. What we noticed when we looked at the literature hitherto in medical education was that people have often talked at a very programmatic level, as in, how can we get our educators to become more involved? What programs of education can we give them that will help them to feel more comfortable with the job of being a medical educator? How can we get them to come to this, that, or the other workshop? But actually, what Anderson and Schlossberg show is that these programmatic results may not be successful for a multitude of individual reasons, and that those reasons need to be explored. So, for example, you may have a junior doctor who desperately wants to be a teacher, is keen, is energetic, is enthusiastic, has done all the training, but for just that period during their lives, for 3 months, they're on a rotation which doesn't fit in very well with teaching, or they're in an environment where teaching isn't encouraged. And so no matter how successful you are in creating programmatic support, if you don't look at what the individual is going through, you may find that they're not able to take full advantage of developing a medical educator identity in those circumstances. So the framework involves four key components that are related to an individual's ability to cope with change leading to transition. And those involve their self, which means what their background, what their circumstances are, what their motivation and values are, and so on. For example, if you actually don't believe that medical education makes much difference to patient care, then no matter what training you have, you are going to find it very hard to really throw yourself wholeheartedly into medical education as a career. Your situation. So what was the trigger that started you off? Did you really want to do it in the first place? Were you in the right place at the right time? Is this not the right time for you? Then the third S is support. So partly that's programmatic support, but it may also be simply that you want to take on a medical education job but you've got no support from your family or your employers to do it. And the final S is about your personal strategies. And what we discovered when we talked to our experienced educators is that they had some very well-defined strategies. And they had a great deal in common around this framework that showed what was liable to have made them successful. So working backwards from that, we were hoping that we might be able to identify those factors that had made our particular group of expert educators successful in making this identity as a medical educator, and apply those backwards to look at beginning medical educators to ensure that they actually have all the various supports and strategies in place to cope with the changes.
And going back to what you said earlier as to part of what motivated this and the role that you play in the Academy of Medical Educators, is this leading to particularly concrete strategies yet for how you might meet just that goal?
Well, the Academy of Medical Educators is a UK organisation that recognises people's skills and achievement in medical education at a national level by the award of membership and fellowship. I don't think that there's anything equivalent to it that I know of elsewhere in the world, but I'd be willing to be corrected on that. Certainly the American academies tend to be focused on the institution rather than on a national set of standards. Mm-hmm. So the idea with forming the academy was specifically to provide support and career recognition for people who may be struggling with their identity as a medical educator in circumstances where they don't have the support and a, should we say, conducive situation to help them continue with their careers. Now, speaking personally, I became a fellow of the Academy of Medical Educators way back in 2009 when we were just starting the recognition scheme. And I recall very vividly the tremendous sense of belonging that I suddenly got from receiving a certificate of fellowship approved by my peers, showing that I was performing at a level that was recognised nationally. And in fact, I would say that my sense of having completed my medical educator transition actually goes back almost to that point. So I do think that certainly an organisation like the Academy of Medical Educators in terms of support can be very helpful, but still it can't address those aspects of self and situation that Schlossberg and Anderson describe so vividly as being things that really are necessary to help people move on.
It is a very important role that the Academy is playing, and great to hear that you're being so deliberate in trying to determine how to best support these individuals, because I think we all know that we lose far too many very good people who could make great contributions to medical education just because this transition is such a difficult leap for so many.
Yes, and indeed, I mean, this is sadly one of the things that we all understand. You know, the practice of medicine is stressful. The practice of working as an academic in a university is stressful. And when you add on to that teaching and management and educational administration, anybody's life is going to be very stressful. And indeed, I was very struck by the study that was done and is cited in the paper. I think it was Lowenstein, Fernandez and Crane, which suggested that 42% of medical educators at one institution were thinking of leaving, presumably because they were finding it too stressful. So it isn't just the fact that people don't come into medical education because they perceive it as hard, or they dip their toe in the water and realise it's not for them. There is also the steady attrition of people who are leaving. So I think looking at the experiences of people who have stuck it out through thick and thin, and in particular what strategies and support and what it was that made them hang on in there, Kevin, is a useful addition to the literature and probably something that I would like to continue to explore further.
Yeah, that's great. I certainly hope that happens, and I agree. I think your description just now reinforces the reason for having used the model that you used, even though it came from situations that people might more spontaneously think of as being life-altering and often negative ways.
I think we can agree, though, that becoming a medical educator is a life-altering experience.
Right. Just a bit more gradual one for most. This is great. As I said, I do think it's important that this is usually the point where I would thank the author for submitting such an interesting and informative paper to our journal. In this case, though, I want to take the opportunity to thank you for something much broader, because, as I said at the top, you spent a lot of time at medical education, and too few people know the individuals working behind the scenes who really do make the journal what it is. And so anybody who doesn't know should remember the name Mrs. Julie Brown, because you really did have such a vital influence on turning the journal into what it is today. And for that, I think we all have reason to be very appreciative. So thank you for this and for your efforts much more broadly.
Kevin, you're very kind. It's been an honour and a privilege and nothing but a joy to be involved in medical education. I love to read the journal. I still get it every month and rush to open it. And I think it's going from strength to strength. So congratulations on your editorship and congratulations to the whole journal team. You're doing a grand job.
Thank you. I'll finish by reminding our listeners that I've been speaking with Mrs. Julie Brown from the Cardiff University School of Medicine, and the paper we've been talking about is entitled Making the Leap to Medical Education, Qualitative Study of Medical Educators' Experiences, and you will find it in the February 2018 issue of Medical Education. Thanks again for listening, and thanks, Julie, once more for your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.